Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston, and join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So another week here in Lake Holbrook Begone. I feel like sometimes that's what this podcast is like, you know, Garrison Keillor, Lake Wobegon. Mm. This is what's going on.
Like COVID Begone?
COVID, Lake COVID. Garrison Keillor, come back. You need to do Lake COVID Begone. Actually, I think he's been canceled, but that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, let's not get into that.
That nonsense. All right. So let's talk about what we've been doing. And so this past Saturday was another...
Yesterday?
Well, as people are listening to this, it's at least Tuesday, perhaps even Wednesday or Thursday.
For us, it's yesterday. Okay.
Yes, I know. We've been over this.
You confuse me.
We record on Sunday nights. I edit it on Monday. We release it on Tuesday because I'm doing a whole lot. I'm recording two shows and editing Secrets of Star Wars, which you've got to get out because people need to listen to the latest episode on the Mandalorian.
Right. Well,
So we get kind of, our show kind of gets shoved in there in the middle of all that. In any case, let's talk about our day on Saturday. So we mentioned that in November we were supposed to have a camping trip where Bella and Sophie and Ben and Anthony were all supposed to go. It's a scout camping trip. The girls' troop, and then Ben's troop, and Anthony was going to go sort of, Anthony's a Weebla, but he was going to go along as like sibling
tag-alongs,
which they allow.
Our troop is really friendly to sibling tag-alongs.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of scout troops are.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is good. But
scouting is a family thing.
Yeah.
It's not just about the scouts as unique, as rugged individuals.
No. I think they recognize, if scouts have siblings, that means more scouts, which they need.
Right.
B, they need volunteers, and getting more of the kids involved means more of the parents are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And C, you know, all of the above. But you always got to have A, B, and C. You can't just have A and B.
Yes, you can.
You always have to have three things.
No, you don't.
Yes. First, I'm just kidding. In any case, so we were supposed to have a camping trip. It got canceled because of new COVID-based restrictions, et cetera, et cetera. But we can have day things as long as we keep the groups separate, which... Right.
They were also supposed to have a Klondike Derby.
Right, which we've talked about on the show before, which is usually like in January sometime. We had a Klondike Derby because it was in January, but that was like the last big event that scouts did in our area before the lockdowns. So this was sort of a substitute. We did like an individual Klondike Derby between the girls' troop, which is Troop 13, the boy troop, which is Troop 56. Well, two parts of the boy troop. There's Troop 56, the regular, and then the new scouts, the new Weeblos who just crossed over. So, Adam's patrol of scouts that he's been shepherding, that includes his son. Adam's Uber Scout.
Mm-hmm.
He is like, Mr. I throw in a backpack, I hike up into the woods, I kill a bear, and eat it raw.
Yeah.
But he's super, like, he was planning a Mount Everest trip a year ago.
Wow.
Which I think was canceled because of COVID or maybe other stuff. But yeah, so he's Uber outdoors guy. And so we had our Klondike Derby. So it was.
It's usually a whole council.
Yeah, it's events. Hundreds of kids. It's usually hundreds of kids, a dozen troops. They all have a sled that they build or the parents build or that they've inherited that they've been in the troop for years or whatever. But it's a sort of looks like a dog sled. The kids pull it around all day. They have various scout skill related tasks that they have to perform. They have to work as a team. They have to do like compass work, all that sort of stuff. So we had a scaled down version of that between these small groups with just a handful of kids and the parents. And so I was the parent leader for the girls troop, one of the two parent leaders. And so there was a orienteering. So they had to take a compass bearings. It was a sort of a compass bearing exercise. And they got a code and they had to go from point A to B following a bearing. Then they had to follow the next bearing, then the next bearing, the next bearing till they got to the end. And then they had to redo it right. So they did that really well. There was a giant slingshot.
That looked fun.
Yeah, so exactly what you imagined, a giant slingshot. Two of the girls hold the ends, and one, and then the third girl shoots a tennis ball, and they take turns shooting. I did show them the video from Amazing Race from 10 years ago of the woman who was shooting watermelons in a giant slingshot, and the watermelon somehow got caught up in the slingshot and fired back into her face.
Oh, that was so bad.
It's 10 years later. I bet she's still pulling watermelon out of her nostrils. I mean, oh man, that was the, but I said, don't do this. But they were shooting them pretty far, and there was actually, it was on the shotgun range. They have a shotgun range at Camp Mono where they do skeet in the, at the summer camp.
Right.
And so there was these poles way out there. I don't know what the poles are for, but these giant poles, telephone pole size things, and Bella hit one of them. So she got an extra point. So I was kind of proud of her for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there was putting up a shelter.
Yeah.
So they had a tarp, and they had to put up a shelter and fit all the scouts and their gear under it out of the weather. There was...
You had some weather.
Well, that came to you. I'll talk about that in a sec. Then there was the crazy campsite.
Crazy campsite?
So one of the older scout leaders sets up a campsite, a faux campsite, and all these things are wrong with it.
Oh, and they have to identify what's wrong?
They have to identify all the things that are wrong.
Oh, fun!
Yeah. There's like... he's got a fire pit that he didn't clear the pine needles away from.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a can of off sitting on the rock next to the fire pit.
Oh.
And he's got a clothesline hung up right outside the door to the tent. So like if you get up in the middle of the night, come out
clothesline
of the,
you'll yourself.
Literally get clotheslined.
Oh man.
He's even hung laundry on it, and he had underwear with a mark on it, but he's like, it's chocolate. Don't worry. It's just chocolate. I'm like, why would you? Never mind. Boys. He said last year at when he did this for the big Klondike, there were two boys who sniffed. why would you like, dude?
Because they're boys.
Out of 100 boys, you're going to have the one or two who's going to, yeah. Anyway, so they had the crazy campsite. And then the last challenge, which I'm trying to think of, did I miss one? I don't think I did. There was supposed to be a race. We got rained out. And the last challenge was to build a fire using natural methods. And then they were going to cook their lunch over it. Well, it was raining. So the day started in the fog. It was wicked foggy. When we left the house, you couldn't see like more than 100 yards down the street. It was really foggy. And it was beautiful as we were driving down there because the fog was pretty low, but the sun, there was like blue sky above it. And the sun was shining like pink through it. It was really gorgeous. And but when we got there, the weather was fine for most of the day, but then it started raining toward the middle of the day. And but the girls got their fire started using flint and steel.
Nice.
And bark and like a little fire. They had lint. Lint is a great fire starter. And they got it going, but they had trouble getting it going. So I had to lend my lungs. And so I had to blow on it to get the fire going. All the wood was wet. You know,
right.
So it was hard to get it going. So I was a little winded and stunk of smoke, as you know. Oh, wait, did I bring my coat in?
I think it's still on the patio.
I hung my coat out on the patio today because the weather was nice and it was warm. But I think it's still up there. It's 10 o'clock at night. I better go get it. the Amazon delivery guy might take it. That was weird. We came home from church and the Amazon delivery guy had walked to the back of our house and left a package on the patio.
Which is really weird.
We have a package parcel. We've mentioned this before many times. A parcel box by the front door. Like, it was very strange. In any case, so we had to cut short. I had a hot dog. That was my lunch, was like one lone soggy hot dog. But that was fine. I came home and had some soup. And that was it. So it was a good day. I think the kids had fun. Sophie literally said, this was one of the best experiences ever.
Wow.
Yeah. She
nice.
Had a great time. I
That's
think,
good.
She really enjoys. We had all the girls were there. So the whole troop was together.
All five of them.
All five of them. Well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's getting started. But they had a lot of fun. And I think Ben and Anthony had fun. Ben is fitting in. I didn't talk to Anthony much about his experience.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony is a 9-year-old boy. I don't think there's a lot of reflectiveness on that sort of thing.
No.
But, you know what? He started listening outside the door while we record. So I wonder if he hears me talking about him. Yes, Anthony, I'm talking about you.
No, I just got him a new book on Kindle. So.
Oh, good. So he's in his bed.
He's reading his library book right now.
We were talking about that he gets lonely while we were recording. So he comes and listens at the door.
I'm not sure if it's really loneliness or curiosity.
It's FOMO. He's fear of missing out.
Yeah.
So that was our day. So then we came home and, you know, we came home a little earlier. We were supposed to come home at 4, but we got home around 1:30.
Yeah.
But you were here and you were just you and Lucy.
It was a very quiet day, mm-hmm. just me and Lou, and I'm trying to remember if she's ever been home, like, for that long a period of time.
As the youngest of 5 kids, homeschooled, she does not get only kid at home time very often.
Okay, so I'm going to tell on myself. I slept in until 10 o'clock on Saturday morning.
Lay a bed.
I totally did. And I actually was having dreams like for the last hour or so. I dreamed that you like all came back early, but I also dreamed that Lucy was really scared and lonely and sitting outside the door in the hall crying. So when I woke up, I was like afraid. I looked at the clock and I said, oh my goodness, it's 10 o'clock. This poor child has been wandering around the house.
We left the house at 7. So
yeah, she'd been wandering around the house by herself for 3 hours. So I found her in the living room, sitting on the couch, reading a book. And I said, hey, how you doing? She's like, oh, great. I'm reading a book. I said, okay, what have you been doing? And she said, well, I was playing with Legos in Ben and Anthony's room. They said I could play with their Legos.
Yes, they did.
And she said, and then I played chess against herself, I guess. And then I read a book. And she seems just perfectly happy to have been just hanging out by herself. Like, the whole house to herself. Nobody else around. She was not at all upset that I had been asleep this whole time.
I was there, by the way, for the negotiations or the instructions on what she was allowed to play with and what she wasn't allowed to play
I'm
with.
I'm sure it was
they were long and detailed.
Yes.
Yes.
So Lucy and I did some baking because today, Sunday, was her feast day.
Santa Lucia Day.
And so she... So I made the traditional braided bread. Well, our family's traditional braided bread with it's got like orange and lemon zest in it and a little bit of cardamom and cinnamon. So it's kind of a sweet flavored bread. And I braid it up in a nice little ring and then I frost it with cream cheese.
Ring is like a Lucia crown.
Yeah, like a Lucia crown. And then I also make for her because, of course, she can't actually eat this. I started the tradition before she was born and before she was diagnosed with a wheat allergy. So for her, I make an adaptation of the traditional Swedish Lucia kotler, which are little S-shaped buns. I just make them with gluten-free flour. And she was very excited this year since she can now eat eggs officially. She did egg wash on them and sprinkled sugar on them. A lot of egg wash. She was very generous with the egg wash. It was awesome. So we baked. She got an uninterrupted iPad turn. I like let her play on it for like an hour and a half. And there was no big brothers and sisters looming over her and watching what she was doing.
On using other people's game, continuing the game.
Yeah. And, nobody to interrupt her or tell her what to do or boss her around. She was in her glory. She loved it.
She looked a little disappointed to see us.
I think she would have been happy if you'd stayed till 4. Actually, I had originally promised her a movie. And then I realized, like, if we were going to spend the morning baking and you guys came home early, we probably wouldn't fit in a movie. And indeed, we did not.
Oh.
So she was kind of sad. She was looking forward to Mama Lucy movie day.
Well, yeah, then we came home and I made chicken and rice, lemon rice soup, which was good.
It was good.
That was really, it hit the spot after a cold, rainy, we were pretty wet coming home from the rain, but it was good. It was a good day. It was relatively warm. It was in the 40s and today was in the like high 50s. It was nice. So that was, it's a good thing we came home early because my mom and my dad and my sister, Francesca, happened to be in the neighborhood and stopped by. Which is nice. Hadn't seen my mom and my dad in a bit, and they stayed in the car. They didn't come in, but we went out to say hi. They wanted to drop
in the rain.
In the rain, yeah. We wanted to drop off. They wanted to drop off Christmas presents because we probably won't see them at Christmas. And thank you, COVID. COVID be gone. And I'm gonna make that the title. No, I'm not gonna make the title. I don't want COVID to be on the title. Anyway, Francesca's funny because she's like, okay, this is a gift for the whole family. When you open it, I have to activate the Square Trade warranty. I'm like, okay, so it's a piece of technology, right? Because that's what Square Trade is like, warranties for tech. It's a company that does warranties for tech. And I'm like, what is it? She was kind of hinting that she wanted me to open it now, but I know you. You do not do the let's open Christmas presents not on Christmas.
Well, because, it's Christmas. Christmas presents are for Christmas. I know you. Your sister is like you and your whole family. They're like it's a present. You have to open it this second so I can see it.
What's in it? What's in it?
No sense of like anticipation. Putting it under the tree and then waiting for like 3 weeks until it's time to open it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that feeling of waiting and waiting.
Yeah, like. It's the mystery box. It's sitting there under the tree. You're like, what did Grandma send me? And you pick it up.
Okay, J.J. Abrams.
You sneak in there and you pick it up when nobody's around and you kind of rattle it. And you try to guess what it is. And you have weeks to think about it and anticipate it. And then you open it up and it's an ugly Christmas sweater.
Yeah. I want my disappointment now, not later.
Actually, my grandmother never sent us ugly Christmas sweaters. She usually sent us like hand-sewn, handmade things.
Oh, that's nice.
It was really sweet.
Oh, I think I figured out what it is anyway. I think it's a drone.
You're going on record officially your official guess?
I am on record official podcast guess. So you'll hear in a couple weeks after Christmas, it's a drone. Because I'm trying to think of what technology she would buy me that would require a warranty. Like if it was like one of these like game things, like play all the old games from the 80s things, that you wouldn't get a warranty for that. But she wouldn't buy me she wouldn't buy a Mac. That's way too expensive or anything like that. So, and she knows not to get me like any PC stuff or Android stuff. So I'm trying to think what other technology would there be that would require, I think it's a drone. So I'll let you know. My family's kind of drone crazy because this would be the third drone. Like my brother Bernie gave Ben a drone. Evie gave Sophie a drone in previous years. Both of which they don't really fly because they're kind of inexpensive and thus don't fly very well. Like they go up and bam into stuff. So the kids lose patience. Speaking of FOMO and not being able to wait, when I was a kid, I knew where my mom hid the gifts. Did you peek?
No. Well, okay. I did once or twice. And then I realized that it was not as much fun because like I knew what it was and I have to pretend to be surprised and I had to like pretend not to know. And no, it's better not to know.
I totally peeked. Of course, my brother John got caught peeking once.
Uh-huh.
And so my mom gave me all his presents, which, unbeknownst to me. Thanks, Mom, because who received the ire of his disappointment was me.
Wow.
Because I was playing with his toys. I didn't know that.
That's harsh.
My mom did not think that through.
Not enough.
Yeah. So...
Wow.
I did love that Evel Knievel stunt cycle and stunt wagon. It was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
that was a harsh one. He learned his lesson on that one, I think. No, he didn't. So no, I just thought to his teenage years. No, he didn't. So so that was Mom and Dad came to visit. It was really nice to see them. And of course my dad, you know, hands me a check and he's like, here's, you know, some money for Christmas. I'm like, thanks, Dad. And it's sitting here, I'm like, do I cash it? Like, I don't really need to, it's nice, but it's like, it's a few bucks, but my dad wants to do something nice, so I'll cash it, and I'll buy the kids something with it.
Right.
Yeah. So there's that, and then, then I want to mention, I don't think I mentioned last week, so every day at lunch, I do the crossword puzzle, right? And I do it on my iPad, and I have the iPad with the Apple Pencil, and I really like the feel of, I don't like to type in iPad apps. For a crossword puzzle, they're really annoying. The way that they kind of, you don't know which way they're going to go, and you type, and it types over stuff. I like writing it, but I like doing it on the iPad because it's easier to erase and redo, and I just really liked it much better.
So geeky.
I'm very geeky. And it's always, it's the one in the Boston Globe, and I print it out and put it in a different app, and then I write on it with the Apple Pencil.
He has this whole very elaborate high-tech ritual for doing the crossword puzzle.
I have a link on my website that shows how to do it, if you're interested in doing it.
And meanwhile, if I want to do it, he prints one out on paper for me, and I vastly prefer it that way, so yes, we're happy.
Hey, it works.
And this way, we can both do the crossword puzzle and not have to, like, fight over it.
I think it works great. When we were first married, we used to do the crossword puzzle at dinner time, the two of us.
Right.
At the table, dinner table, because it was just the two of us. And I really enjoyed that part of it. And I like doing the crossword puzzle. It keeps my brain active and that sort of thing. So I lost my Apple Pencil. Like, so it's the new one. So it magnetically attaches to the top of the iPad. And it was my mistake. Okay. I left the iPad. I came back for it. I was in the middle of doing three different things. I put the iPad down in three different places in the kitchen. When I finally got the iPad, I put it in the office, and I'm like, where's my Apple Pencil? And so I went back to look at all the places where it was. And it's like, so it's not on the box. I put it on a box full of coffee pots. It wasn't in the box with the coffee pots. It wasn't on the floor. It wasn't on the table. It hadn't rolled off the table. It wasn't in the corners of the thing, under the cabinets. I looked everywhere. Every place I could imagine it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled it apart. Like, you can testify.
You were pretty thorough.
Right. I was pretty much willing to give it up as lost. And then say, you know, hopefully we'll find it again. And what if we do, we'll be fine. But I'm not going to go out and buy another Apple Pencil just because I lost it. Until we realized Bella uses my iPad and the Apple Pencil to do her math in Khan Academy. And
she really has a hard time with trying to do it without a pencil.
Right. Typing it. She can't do it typing it. And you can't really use Khan Academy without, you know, it's an app. You have to do it in an app. So I went to the Apple store, went through the rigmarole of the getting, you know, the temperature check and the whole thing, and just getting the new pencil and coming back. And they're not cheap, I know, but, you know, that's my stupidity. I had to pay the price. Then I came home, we were good. And what was it, like a day or two later?
It was like maybe at least 2 or 3 days later.
Yeah. I'm sitting at the table, turn around and look, and there's the picture how our table or dining table is like. You turn around and you're looking into the kitchen. It's a galley style kitchen, and the toaster oven is right there on the counter right in front, right next to the table. I look over, and on the top of the toaster oven we have a couple of pans, and I look at the pan. I'm like, what's on the pan? What's that white thing on the pan? Somehow I had put the iPad down on the toaster oven?
No, I think what happened is Anthony was making English muffin pizzas on the little bar pan that slides into the toaster oven. Oh. Because the bar pan still had the foil on it from his English muffin pizza.
So we put the pan on the table, and the Apple Pencil is magnetic.
So it magnetized itself to the pan. But I'm pretty sure that the pan had not been used since the pencil got attached to it because it still had the foil on it.
But did it go through the... I've got it here.
No.
It's all scratched up, but it didn't go through the oven.
It couldn't have.
But how did it get on the pan? When he took it out of the oven?
Yeah, he took it out of the oven and put it on a trivet on the table.
Okay, so it still would have been warm, but it didn't go through the oven. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it's all scratched up and stuff, and the tip is messed up somehow. I don't know what happened to it, but it's kind of sticking out. So now I have a backup pencil. I mean, it works, but just like of all the things, so I got to be better about paying attention to my stuff. Anyway, so that's my Apple pencil.
Things sticking to things with magnets seems like a great idea until it doesn't.
Right. Well, if I... That's how it charges. Like if it's certainly a better way to charge it than the old way, which is sticking out like a tail out of the lightning port.
Yeah.
That's
a recipe for disaster right there.
But so the case I've got the iPad in actually has a flap that comes around when it's closed. I just got to remember to do that. I can't just leave my stuff around. That's the other thing. So don't leave my stuff around. I gotta pick my stuff up. Anyway, I tell the kids, let's move on.
Yes.
Is my my tale of woe and stupidity. Carelessness, not stupidity, carelessness. Let's talk about what we're eating. You mentioned the St. Lucia bread and buns,
yes,
which were good, and we're still working through those. They're hearty. It's like the bread is kind of hearty.
Wait, I thought we were talking about what we're reading or eating?
Eating.
Oh, I thought you said reading. I was expecting you to talk about books, and now you're talking about bread? I'm really confused here.
No, it's always what we've done, what we're eating, and then what we're reading or watching.
I really swear you said eating. I mean reading.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know.
I said eating, too. Anyway, so let's talk about food.
Okay, food.
Food.
Food we can do. Yes.
So we talked about the Santa Lucia bread and the buns, and I was going to just mention, as it occurred to me, they're pretty hearty. Like, the bread is, like, it's not dessert bread.
Well,
like, it's sweet, but it's a hearty crumb.
I use my challah recipe, which it's sort of my adaptation of challah. So traditional challah uses water and oil because, of course, it's got to be kosher.
Right.
But I make it with milk and butter. And so it's like really, it's got milk, it's got butter, it's got eggs.
It's rich.
It's rich. It doesn't have a lot of sugar. In fact, I actually kind of cut down on the sugar.
That's what I was going to say. So the Lucia bread.
And this version actually had a little bit of whole wheat flour in it. Mm. And like a pinch of cinnamon, pinch of cardamom, some lemon and orange zest. So it's like.
The sweetness comes from the glaze. You glaze it.
Well, frost it.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a cream cheese frosting with also not very much sugar. Like maybe like a quarter cup of sugar for a block of cream cheese. I mean, it's maybe even less than that.
Yeah. So it's dessert, but it's not like sweet, cakey dessert.
Yeah.
That's what I was getting at. Okay.
It's like a hearty bread.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So we had that. But speaking of which, Hanukkah started this past week.
Yes,
So Thursday night. And given that my grandfather was Jewish, I like to observe it a little bit in some way.
Our nod to our heritage.
Our heritage, right. And you came up with the idea of making latkes for dinner on
Friday. I had several friends who were posting pictures of latkes on Facebook, and I started getting a craving for yummy fried potato-y, crunchy goodness.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was a good, the recipe you made was good.
It was good.
Basically, grate up potato, grate up
onion,
and squeeze out all the liquid, mix it with a little bit of flour, a little bit of egg. What else?
Flour, egg, salt, pepper.
Yeah. And then fry it in a pan.
Yeah. I had to.
Just like
I had
the song.
Right. I had to adapt it a little bit because Lucy was going to eat some. So I did use gluten-free flour.
Was it the rice flour?
I used some white rice flour and some potato starch.
Okay. Potato starch. Great idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of potatoes. Yeah.
I think it was potato starch. Pretty sure. Yeah.
You know, we do have sour cream. We could have used the sour cream.
I know. I meant to get it out and then I forgot. I also had Bella make some applesauce to go with it.
Yep.
No. And we knew that potato pancakes and applesauce was not going to be enough
not
for some people. I'm not pointing any fingers, but I'm pointing some fingers.
Yes. No, I, knowing myself, if I just had carbs for dinner, I would not be happy.
Yeah.
So, we had a bag of frozen shrimp in the freezer. So I got it out, defrosted it.
Which made me laugh because we're like having our sort of semi-Hanukkah celebration with something
shellfish.
That's totally not kosher.
Totally. Hey, I'm half, you might say my mom is half Jewish. So therefore, you're not really half Jewish, but it was a half Jewish, half goy dinner. So shrimp, and Bella was saying that last time or a previous time we had it, I had made a ginger soy dipping sauce that she really enjoyed. So I made another Alton Brown's recipe, ginger soy dipping sauce. Although this time she thought it was too gingery.
She did.
I could cut back on it. I might have overdid the ginger a little bit on this one, so I could cut it back a little bit. But I thought it was really good.
Okay. What was funny was that Anthony decided that the ginger soy dipping sauce was perfect on the latkes.
And actually, they were really good.
It really was. I was like skeptical at first and I kept going back to it. Like,
yeah.
I was alternating between the applesauce and the ginger soy dipping sauce and they were both really good.
That was really good. Anthony is the I will dip anything in anything child.
He is raccoon boy.
He's raccoon boy. He will mix anything just to try it.
Or as we sometimes affectionately say, Trash Panda.
Trash. Yeah, he is Trash Panda. So that was good.
It was. It was a nice Friday night dinner, and it was relatively easy.
A dinner that wasn't necessarily as well received was I had tried this recipe for a ground beef stir fry, a garlic ginger ground beef stir fry.
I think we talked about that last week.
No, I wanted to talk about it, but you said we'd had too many things to talk about in the food, so we would put it off a week.
Oh, okay. I'm this really confused. Week. This is the week.
This is the week. Right. So it's ground beef, mushrooms, and then whatever vegetables you want. I use carrots and green pepper, red pepper.
Bok choy.
Some stuff, mushrooms, stuff that we had on hand. The sauce is beef broth, which we didn't have. I thought we had beef broth. There was a carton on the shelf.
Oh,
in the pantry.
that was sad.
It expired in May, which, you know, a carton in May. I think that's probably well within the realm of this is probably okay. Except,
well, it wasn't like expired. It was like best of use by.
Yeah. Right, which means you've got time, you know. But then when I went to open it up, someone had opened it up before. It was opened. Like, it had been opened, used, and put on the shelf instead of in the fridge.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, oh, this is
No.
This
That's
is
bad.
If I use this, later on, the police will be saying, this is the disease vector for this family. This is the poisoning vector for this family. Yeah that would have been bad. So I ended up using
chicken
bouillon. I mixed up some hot water. I had move quick. We didn't have any stock in the fridge, so... quick, and then some tapioca starch, soy sauce, which, did we have the soy sauce? No, we didn't, so I had to use the coconut aminos.
I think that this would have been more successful if we'd had real soy sauce.
I think I'm going to try it again, because it's, so coconut amino is a substitute that's often used for soy sauce for people who are gluten intolerant. Like soy intolerant, right, because I think your sister left it here.
My sister left it here because she can't have soy anymore.
Right. So, yeah, so I use that. Soy sauce often is made with wheat, unless you get the Kikkoman right. gluten-free, which our supermarket doesn't carry, so we have to special order it from Amazon. Really annoying. So we were out at the time. And so, because the coconut aminos are okay, but it's kind of bland.
Yeah.
It also has honey, sesame oil, ginger, and garlic. I kind of liked it.
It was good. There was way too much liquid in it. Like, I would have cut the broth by half.
Yeah, it cost her 2 cups of broth for 2 pounds of beef.
That was way too much. I would have done 1 cup of broth at most. Like, I don't really like really wet, liquidy stir-fry dishes.
All that tapioca starch, I'd have to cut the back on the tapioca starch, too, because all that starch thickens it, and so it becomes more like a mugu gai pan recipe.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a huge fan of mugu gai pan, so... I think it would be better with a little less.
I actually like mugu gai pan, but...
Okay. I don't really like the thick white sauces Chinese. But.
Anyway, but I think really it comes down to most of our kids don't really love ground beef dishes. They like tacos, they like stroganoff, but that's pretty much where their ground beef...
I've tried Korean beef bowl, I've tried ground beef stir fry.
Actually, they'll do chili... Well, Ben and Bella won't eat chili.
Yeah.
But
the others will eat chili.
They'll eat chili. But generally, like, Asian ground beef dishes, they're just not really a big hit.
Drives me crazy. Because there's a number of good recipes in there, but I can't have it because they won't eat it. Anyway, so that's what we've been cooking. Some successes, some not so successes. All right, now we can talk about what we're reading. Reading.
Okay.
Is it better if I trill it?
Sure.
Yeah. So, what have you read?
What have I read?
What haven't you read?
In the last week, I have been mostly reading Patrick O'Brien. I picked up Post Captain, which...
Patrick O'Brien is the author of the series, Master and Commander series.
I was going to get there.
Okay.
I'm getting there.
I didn't want you to lay it down there and people go, who? Go ahead.
Post Captain is the second book of the Aubrey Matarin series, which I think it extends to like 15, 16 books, something like that.
Oh, there's the unfinished one, which is 20.
Okay, so 19 books.
Yeah.
Okay, finished. We don't count the unfinished one because right. it's blah. Anyway, it's a series of novels set during the Napoleonic Wars, the Age of Sail.
Age of Sail.
Right.
The beginning of the 19th century.
Yeah. And it follows... Our two main characters are Jack Aubrey and Stephen Maturin. And Jack Aubrey is a Navy officer.
British.
British. Works his way up the ranks. Stephen Maturin is half Irish, half Catalonian.
Yes. Very interesting.
Definitely not Spanish, but Catalonian. This is a huge plot point.
Yes. Catholic. He's a papist.
He's Catholic. And the two of them are the most unlikely friends in the world. Stephen is a total landlubber. He knows nothing about the Navy or the ocean. And Jack, like, lives, eats, breathes, and drinks. Like, he was raised on ships, practically.
Right.
Since he was, like, 6 years old or something. But they are united by their love of music.
Yes.
Jack plays...
They meet at a concert.
Right. Jack plays the cello and Stephen plays the violin.
Yes.
And they love music.
And in the first book, Stephen ends up becoming the ship surgeon because, on Jack's ship.
Because he's like penniless and trapped in...
Malta.
Malta?
No, Mallorca.
Mallorca, right.
Yeah.
So the second book...
Or Menorca, I forget which one.
One of the two.
Yeah.
In the second book, the war ends and Jack is stranded on land and they sets up housekeeping and they meet...
This is post-captain.
Post-captain.
Yeah.
They meet some girls... And of course, there's some rivalry. The girls that they meet are Sophia Williams and her cousin, Diana Villiers. Diana is a widow. Her husband died, alas, in India. And they're both young and beautiful. And
Diana's like sort of exotic, though, right? She's a little more outgoing.
She's kind of, Diana is a little bit more worldly. She's been married and she's been like to India and
right.
She's kind of worldly wise. And Sophia is sheltered and
classically just a, like the quiet, perfect English wife
sweet.
Material.
Both men kind of are head over heels over both girls. And it takes a while to sort out this like love quadrangle.
Yes.
And then there's sort of back and forth, like, are we going to go to sea? Are we not? There's a delightful passage where in order to escape their creditors, they end up going to Spain, to Stephen's castle in Mallorca. But they get trapped in France when
the war starts.
The war starts. And this is when Napoleon actually rounds up all the British citizens in France and imprisons them. Which was huge. Like, this is not something that you did. Napoleon
right.
was breaking with all tradition. So in order to get out of France, Stephen dresses Jack in a bear skin, like a bear costume, and pretends that he's a bear. Because Stephen,
bear. Yeah.
Right. Stephen, being half Spanish, looks exotic. He doesn't look like an Englishman. He's not. But Jack would stand out like a sore thumb. He's like six something and blonde hair.
Ruddy skin. Yeah. He's like,
he would, there was no way he would pass.
It's like he'd have a billboard that says Englishman here over his head.
Right. And his ability, his attempts to speak Spanish are like,
or
French are just impossible.
Yes.
Whereas Stephen, of course, is fluent in both. He's a polymath.
Stephen is a cosmopolitan man who has hidden talents.
Right. It turns out that he's actually spying for the British government because he's a Catalonian separatist who wants to help Catalonia win
independence from Spain.
Independence from Spain.
Which would benefit England.
Right. Ironically, though, he wouldn't mind really Ireland being independent from Britain. So he's got conflicted loyalties as far as
yes.
Britain is concerned.
Right.
In as much as I'm a Catalonian, I'm pro-British. But in as much as I'm an Irishman, I'm anti-British. And in as much as I'm a papist, I'm really not for Britain.
He's
British
not
at all.
So much pro-British as he is pro-Catalonia and will accept help from the Brits.
Right. Anyway, but Jack knows nothing of Stephen's spying. So Stephen is a naturalist. He loves birds and animals of all sorts, and he's a physician. And
you don't get enough of this stuff in the movie,
right?
Like the movie with Russell Crowe and
right. They'll be having a conversation, and then suddenly Stephen's like off on looking at a bird, which kind of reminds me of Isabella, actually.
Yes.
Anyway. It's a fun series. I think I first read it like about the time we were married.
Yeah.
So it's been a good 15 years.
I think it's time for me to reread the books too.
Yeah, I just kind of, I don't know why I started on the second book. I think the first one kind of is a little bit
drags a bit
slow. I don't know.
If Patrick O'Brien, if he has a vice that is also, or a flaw that is also a virtue, it is his description of everything to the last detail. If you want to know, like, everything he describes of how the ship sails is accurate. And we all know this because he describes every single thing in excruciating detail. But I kind of wish I knew everything he was. I know about a lot of it, but I wish I knew everything he was talking about so I could picture it. And there are some reference books that I picked up that help with that. But yeah, but it's, even if you don't, you just skim that stuff.
I skim it.
Yeah. It's still
shamelessly
rip roaring good adventure stories.
They're really fun. Not
for little younger kids.
Yeah. The some of the exploits are not G-rated.
Some of the, yeah, the sailors.
Right.
In Sailor in Port, you get my drift. There's some of that.
But they're really fun. There's a great sense of humor about them. I
love Killick.
And just like the ups and downs, the ins and outs. It's,
yeah, Jack has a servant. He's the captain's servant, steward. His name is Killick.
Preserved Killick.
Preserved Killick. And he's just so great. He's awesome.
He's not actually in much of Post Captain. He's disappeared through most of the novel.
Yeah, because they're not at sea.
But. Right.
All right.
So that is what I've been reading.
Okay. You've also been reading something.
With the kids, we've been reading the second and third of the Anna Hibiscus books, which I talked about last week. And I continue to be blown away by this series for kids. Tonight, we read a story about, it's set kind of, she doesn't say it's Nigeria, but it's Nigeria. And she doesn't say it's Lagos, but it's Lagos.
Right.
But so they're talking about the months leading up to Christmas, like it's set about right now. They have a dry season where the winds blow off the Sahara, bringing clouds of dust and dryness. And Anna Hibiscus is young enough that she doesn't really remember last year. And so she's like wondering what the heck is going on with this brown, dry, grittiness all over the garden. And her family are obviously pretty wealthy, well off. They live in a big compound. And so they start conserving water in order to be able to water their garden, sure, which is the most beautiful garden in all of Africa,
of course,
according to Anna Hibiscus. And then Anna goes to talk to the girls who sell food outside the gate, and they're mad at her and they won't talk to her. And she doesn't understand why. And they say, yeah, you're using your water to water your garden, and their city is out of water for poor people, and our, you know, younger siblings and our old grandparents are probably going to die. And Anna is stunned and heartbroken, and so she goes and talks to her grandmother and grandfather, and then they call a meeting with all the aunties and uncles and cousins, and they all decide that rather than watering their garden, they're going to give water to the children of the city. And they're like, at first the objection is raised, well, there's no way we can give enough water to everyone in the city. But they decide that they're going to do their best and try. And so they stop watering the garden and let it get brown and die. And they have lines of kids every day coming to the door so that they can give them water to take home.
Nice, nice.
I was like, this is an amazing story. It's all about compassion and, you know, giving water to the thirsty. It was really,
yeah, the Beatitudes,
right? And I did not expect this when I picked up the book, so I was kind of blown away. And in the other book that we were reading the other night, there's Anna is curious about what's on the other side of the lagoon. Her aunties and her uncles go there, and they won't let her go, and she's very curious. And finally, she's bugs them so much that her wise grandfather says, let her go. She will see. She needs to understand. Otherwise, she's not going to let us have any peace. And the other side of the lagoon is the poor area of town.
Mm.
And so Anna's uncle and auntie take her there. And it's clear that they go there frequently and give charity to people because they like make a beeline for some people who are in need and, you know, are giving them food and things. But Anna First of all, she loses her flip-flop when she's on the ferry. And so she's wandering through with only one pink flip-flop on. And she's put on her favorite pink dress and her beautiful pink hair ribbons because she's going on an adventure. And she wants to look her best. And then she sees the children picking through the garbage. And one little girl who was wearing nothing but a pair of underwear finds one pink flip-flop. And Anna looks down at the one pink flip-flop on her foot and the one pink flip-flop the girl is holding. And she takes the shoe off her foot and gives it to the girl.
Hmm.
And then later she gives her dress to another girl. And then later she gives her pink hair ribbons to yet a third girl. And so she comes home and her auntie and her uncle, who she's gone with, are a little bit shocked at finding her in only her underpants. And so are the rest of her family. But then she explains what she did with her clothing. And her grandmother just says, God bless you.
Hmm. Kind of reminds me of Pier Giorgio Frassati.
It's exactly what I said. The beggar boy came to the door and he didn't have any shoes. And so Pier Giorgio took the shoes off of his own feet.
He was like 6 or 7 when he did it. And when his mother said, where are your shoes? He said to her, but mama, he didn't have any shoes. I have plenty.
Right. And Anna sort of remembers all of the dresses in her closet. And she sees these children without any clothes. And she gives them the dress off of her back.
Mm.
And I was like, really? It was very understated. It wasn't preachy. It was just a little girl who is wealthy in a country that has extreme poverty, seeing the poverty for herself and wanting just spontaneously to do something about it because she can't not.
Mm.
And I think that's a better lesson than a lot of things that are sort of more explicitly lesson-y.
Right, right.
I really like, there's nothing preachy about it. There's just a sort of simple emotion and response.
Mm, nice. So I'm still reading Ready Player 2. I'm almost done.
Right.
According to the Kindle, I have about a half hour left of reading it. I'm at 93%. I know exactly how it's going to end. So, so last time I was complaining that it was like the all exposition and no plot. Well, the plot kicked in right after we finished recording. At about 40% of the way through the book, the plot was there, and it's a quest, and it's about what you expect, and it just, I mean, it got better than it was, but it really feels like it's like it doesn't have the same magic. It's not the same. Part of it is that the character, the main character, Wade Watts, you know, our viewpoint character, he's not like in the first book. He's kind of a little pathetic, but because he grew up in the stacks and he's poor and had no friends and only had his aunt or grandmother, and his mother had died.
Aunt.
And yeah, it was, and he was kind of a sad kid, but he had friends but now he's the wealthiest man in the world and he's still kind of pathetic and like he messes up relationships but not in a like good, interesting story way, but just in like a pathetic way. Like it's very hard to make him sympathetic. Then they accomplish these quests and it's all very, well, almost literally Deus Ex Machina. It's like, oh, we've completed the quest because we've done X, Y, and Z. And I'm telling you that they did X, Y, and Z. And like, it's very like mechanical and rote and feels like a video game, you know, which is the kind of the idea that the Oasis is a video game, but as a story, it just doesn't feel great. It's okay. I mean, it's not terrible, but as a sequel to Ready Player One, which I really loved, it's not great. It's just good. So, it feels like it was written as a treatment for a movie, which it probably is. He was probably asked to write this so that they could make a sequel to Ready Player One. That's my guess. And that's what it feels like. It feels like a sequel to a movie, for a movie. So,
yeah, I don't tend to be fond of sequels.
Yeah.
Or at least I'm cagey about sequels.
Yeah, I know. I had hopes, but not high hopes, but I had some hopes. So I watched a movie. A new movie came out on Netflix called Ava. It's sort of a international assassin thriller.
Okay.
Filmed and set in Boston. So that was kind of fun. That's what I'm kind of... Jessica Chastain, John Malkovich, Colin Farrell, in full Irish accent Colin Farrell mode.
Oh my.
Yes. And it was pretty good. It was a lot more like relationship family stuff than you usually get in like international assassin movies.
Huh.
She's got history. She's got a past in that she's trying to deal with her family. Gina Davis is in it, who plays her mom, her older mom. Like, it was really weird to see Gina Davis as an old mom.
Hmm.
That's a sign that I'm getting old.
Right.
I remember my parents when I was a kid, like, watching movies and going, oh, they got so old. It was like, of the actors. Yep, that's me. Yeah, it was pretty good. It was the location shoots were good. They filmed like all of these like places that she went around the world in Massachusetts. So Massachusetts like was like they had what did I say? Worcester Airport was what's the French
Paris something.
Bourget Airport in Paris, and they had
in Worcester.
Yeah, in Worcester. It's funny. They had like British Columbia. Was Western Mass with all the trees and stuff and the lake and that sort of thing. Saudi Arabia was all in, you could tell it was indoor shooting, actually. It was all studio, on a set. Soundstage, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
But they had some cool outdoor stuff. You know Boston Sand and Gravel near the Zakin Bridge?
Yeah.
Near the Boston Garden? That's where a key scene at the end of it is, where like you see the big Boston Sand and Gravel tower right behind them as there's this confrontation going on. So that was kind of fun. But they're filmed on the harbor and Gloucester's Wingershek Beach was Normandy, the coast of Normandy.
Oh,
which was interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. I suppose it could work. You squint a little.
That reminds me of one of my grad school roommates was a tour guide at the House of Seven Gables, and she said that one time they had a tourist who asked if that was England over there, pointing over at
Marblehead.
Yeah,
the town on the other side of the harbor.
Yeah,
is that England? Oh my!
Or it might have been Winter Island. I forget, but
it kind of surprises me, like how people don't understand how big the world is.
As if you could see England across the Atlantic Ocean from the coast of Massachusetts.
I mean, I suppose, like, if someone has never been to the ocean, how far away are things?
Right. It's interesting, like, how people's sense of scale can just be... I guess I kind of expect that more from kids, but, yeah, even adults can just be completely...
I mean, it depends if you don't read a lot and you just, you know... You don't pay attention to that sort of thing. It's not in your view, I guess. One of my maxims in life is I think most people live and act as if there are about 2,000 people in the world, in the sense of the odds of encountering other people or the way that your encounters with people will play out. And I think part of it is because we are built to have small communities. You know, hundreds of years ago, unless you lived in the biggest cities, and even then, most people you knew were the same few hundred people. Most people. And I think that's sort of still built into our mindset. And thus, and also, our horizon was much smaller. The world, as we imagined it, as we experienced it, was pretty small. People didn't tend to move. Most people didn't go very far from their home. There were a few, like, soldiers and traders and that sort of thing who did travel, but most people, but I think our perception is on that is skewed because we read books about people who traveled and did exciting adventurous right, things.
Because those are the interesting people to read about.
Those are the interesting stories. Most people never went anywhere.
Although, interestingly enough, I remember reading a book about like recreating the travels of the Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And the ancient Greeks, while they were great seafarers, tended to not ever go out of sight of land.
Right.
Like, they traveled pretty much coastal routes.
Within the coast.
And yes. Like, going, like, across to Egypt was a massive undertaking because you were trying to do dead reckoning across the Mediterranean with no, you know,
right,
out of sight of land.
Well, this is, if you watch the TV show Vikings, this was the big innovation of the first Vikings to come to England and read Lindisfarne, was they figured out how to use a compass. They right. were able to cross open sea. And make it to the other side. And if you
that was a big deal.
Well, if you missed England, Next stop, America, and it's not that island on the other side of the harbor.
Yeah, although they generally, the way they got to America was actually island hopping.
They went, well, when they did do that to America, they went to Iceland, Greenland, Labrador.
Right.
Down. Yes, they did do that.
Those are actually, if you look at the map, those are like from the Orkneys to the Faroe Islands to Iceland are actually fairly short
jumps.
Yeah. They're not. It's not like Columbus crossing the Atlantic.
Right, right. All right.
That's smart.
So anyway. We're way off from what we're talking about.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about the international spy assassin Ava.
Of course.
Yeah. Anyway.
Viking Explorers.
If you have Netflix, go ahead and watch it. It's, you know, it's okay. There's plenty of violence, that's for sure. She's an assassin. But not much in the way of like sexuality stuff. There was like one mild suggestive thing. But other than that, I don't think there was much. Lots of language. So there's that, too. But what you've been watching all week, you've been trying to catch up to the kids.
I have been. I've been racing against the clock to catch up to the kids. Not really.
Catching the kids in?
Star Wars Rebels.
So?
Finally, I got to the point where I just was so far behind where they were, and they really wanted me to catch up. I just decided to kind of start binge watching. And I don't know, The Mandalorian was hitting some of the same notes with some of the characters, and it just seemed the right time.
It is amazing to me how many people who have been watching The Mandalorian, who are not huge like Star Wars nerds, are going back to watch Star Wars Rebels and Clone Wars to catch up on a lot of the stuff that they're talking about. And all of the Star Wars nerds are going, I know what's going on. I know what's going on.
Although I think for me, really, trying to watch it at the pace the kids are watching it, like one or two episodes a week is too slow for me.
Oh yeah.
Like
in the age of binge watch.
Right.
Some of us had to watch it one episode a week.
But I think that my memory for like shows is just not as good as the kids. Yeah. I've got way too many things going on in my head. Too many things I'm reading.
What happened last episode? Trying to remember.
Yeah. So watching a whole bunch, like four or five or six episodes in a row, boom, 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 I actually remember them better than if I'm just watching one a week.
I just want you to finish, so you're in the fourth season, you've got about half the season left. I just want you to finish so we can talk about things.
Right.
Because I have been very good about spoilers. Like, I've been accused of being bad about spoilers, but I've been very good, and you'll know how good I've been when you get to the end of the season. Because I want to talk about
spoilers, sweetie.
I'm not spoiling.
I know.
I'm just saying. I want to talk about it because some of this stuff has come up in Mandalorian already and will come up, I'm sure, as we go. So,
anyway, I have to say, it's still a kid's show in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the notes it hits are very much
slapstick and
slapstick, and even some of the more emotional scenes or plot points are still a little bit more surface level than if it had been made for adults. I feel like there's just
the subtleties.
They're not quite as subtle. They're not quite as, I can't quite put my finger on it sometimes
either.
Right. It's just not quite as deep. And there's a little bit of telling you what the emotional impact is going to be because you might miss it, which again, When you're writing for kids, it makes sense. They need a little bit more exposition because they don't catch those subtle moments.
I'd be curious to see how, if they made this as a live action like The Mandalorian, how different it would be.
Me too. I've been thinking that a lot.
Yeah.
But even so, given all of that, given that it was an animated kids show and given that it misses some of the depth and subtlety of The Mandalorian, it still does quite a bit. And I have to say, I'm finding it really gripping and I really want to keep watching. It definitely got better after season two. The first season was okay. The second season was better. Seasons three and four is some really good storytelling. It's a little bit less episodic and a little bit more story arc.
Yeah.
And it's better storytelling. It's a little bit tighter.
And Clone Wars is like that. The first couple seasons are okay. By the time you get to the season 7, which is just released this year, it's epic. It's epic. So it just seems to be the way it goes with those. Whereas with The Mandalorian, it's out of the gate, bam, and it's been epic.
Right. Well, I almost wonder if they learned a lot about storytelling doing right. Rebels and Clone Wars, and now The Mandalorian is reaping the benefits of...
Also, Jon Favreau, I think, really knows how to tell stories.
Right.
And he came into it with that understanding.
I think probably some of both.
Yeah.
But I definitely see that... I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay.
Anyway, it's good.
Yeah.
And,
all right.
Yeah.
So that's what we've been reading and watching, and I'm sure there'll be more this week. I want to watch some Christmas movies this week. Some of the classics, White Christmas, Home Alone, Die Hard.
Uh-huh.
The classics.
Right.
Let's talk about the third week of Advent. It is Gaudete Sunday, or as we record, and everything is pink, rose. Let's be a man. Pink is fine. So you said you really enjoyed today's homily.
I did. We had a visiting priest, Father...
Bill Williams.
Williams. Bill Williams. It's a great name.
William Williams.
And... Well, you were slightly having a hard time staying awake because you felt like his delivery was a little
monotone, and I was still reaping the benefits of getting up early on Saturday morning and spending my day outside.
And a day outside hiking and stuff.
Yeah.
I was more well-rested than you after sleeping in until 10 o'clock on Saturday. I was, for once, not nodding at all, but wide awake. Anyway, so Father said that there are basically two... The readings presented us with... a challenge and a consolation.
Hmm.
And I really liked that. He had 2 points and he really developed them well and also repeated them enough that they really stuck in your head, which is, I think, a hallmark of a good homily, and really attempted to bring the readings into our daily lived reality. Like, how does this affect me today, right here, right now, as I leave the church and go about my week? And so he says, okay, it's Gaudete Sunday. Rejoice. Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In all circumstances, give thanks. And he said, it's a little bit of a challenge. This is a tall order. Rejoice always. Now, look at our world. We've got a global pandemic. We've got a really hotly contested election.
The mess of politics.
Just to say, mess of politics,
yeah.
And the mess of the church. A lot of people are not looking forward to Christmas when they can't get together with their families. It seems like there's very little reason to rejoice. And yet St. Paul is telling us, rejoice always. And in all circumstances, give thanks. For this is the will of God for you in Christ Jesus. How do we do that? How do we find a reason to rejoice when life is tough? And I really liked that he doesn't try to sugarcoat that. He doesn't see it as like of course we're going to rejoice because we're Christians. This is really a hard teaching. But then he says, pray without ceasing kind of helps to point us to how to do that, because it's finding God, looking for God. And that's not just like praying without ceasing is not saying prayers a lot. Praying without ceasing is about finding God where we are, finding God with us, which is, of course, the meaning of Christmas. God comes to us where we are, in the mess, in the muck, in the sadness, in the mourning, in the terrible times. And he goes through those with us so that we're not alone. If we pray without ceasing, if we take up that challenge to pray without ceasing and to find Christ, to bring Christ into our daily lives, then we can start to maybe find a reason to rejoice that he is with us there. not pretending like the hard stuff isn't there, but rejoicing that God chooses in history to come to where we are. I also listened to a homily from Mount St. Mary's. And the priest who said mass there said, he's of course talking to the Benedictine sisters, and he says that in most of the homilies throughout history in monastic orders on the reflections on these readings really focus not on history, Christ being born in Nazareth 2,000 years ago, and not in the second coming, but the reality right now of Christ being born in our hearts. He says we have no control over the past, and we have no control over the future, but we do have control over right now here and bringing Christ to birth in our lives, again, by praying, reflecting, living the liturgy, but also finding ways to connect to God throughout the day. And he says it's hard, even for nuns living in the monastery. He says, as soon as you sit down and you try to pray, your mind is off in a million directions, full of a million thoughts. It's not that it's easy, but that it's the challenge that we need to you know, rise up to. So I thought those two homilies worked really well together and sort of challenging me to think about what it means to pray without ceasing and what it means to find Jesus, not like putting off finding Jesus until Christmas comes, but finding Jesus right now,
right
today.
This is what's great about the church having these seasons. I mean, I've been through more than 50 Advents,
right?
Every year, it's an, and Lent and Easter and Christmas. These seasons, there's always something new. There's always a return. There's always, I mean, the readings are the same every year.
But we're different.
Or not every year, but you know what I mean? They rotate through the readings. But we change, and the opportunity for the hitting us in a different way changes. So that's awesome. Good. That's, I'm glad you heard that and related so that I could hear it and make it part of me. All right, we should wrap it up there. We do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including David R., Tori, Richard S., Andrew S., and Linda K. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. If you have any feedback or commentary on our discussion, you can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And we'll have relevant links to the various books and other things we talked about in our show notes at sqpn.com. Be sure you've subscribed to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or on YouTube, where you should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications. We're at the SQPN YouTube channel. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.